conscience. Moving on for me involved doing some work on my conscience. Not so much some work that I did by myself, but some work that I did with Christ. I needed more elbow room in terms of my conscience, to be able to live, to be something other than a church puppet. The idea that we were to listen to our consciences was instilled in me early on. I still think that. I think that it is a fatal thing to simply ignore one's conscience, to stifle it, shut it down, and make decisions that go against it, like in a bad marriage, where the wife gets shouted down when she tries to voice concerns. A good conscience is important. The Bible speaks of people whose consciences are cauterized with a hot iron so they just don't work anymore. Clearly, that's not ideal. But I suffered the opposite problem, a perpetually raw, torn-open conscience. I could feel guilty about the Smurfs in the way Jake felt guilty about SpongeBob. I could be tempted to piously not eat hot dogs because they had pork in them, or because beef and beef byproducts might include blood. I was far too terrified to go into a movie theater, pool hall, or video arcade. I never felt free to have any Christmas decorations or vote, all due to conscience. And that endlessly ringing conscience alarm wasn't working any better than an off one would. It just rang all the time. So there needed to be some growth in that area, or so God seemed to feel. A bit about conscience. We were taught that man gained his conscience through theft, by stealing fruit when he did not yet possess the knowledge of good and evil. He'd been told not to eat of it, and he did anyway, and what followed has got to be the longest life lesson or teachable moment ever. Keeping this in mind, I can't help but notice that people in general are very divided as to whether A, we all possess a conscience that is wired in to an absolute right and wrong standard of some kind, which some of us call God, or B, it's all relative, with us personally deciding what we think right and wrong are. Is conscience human or divine? That debate has gone on for ages. I think there's a lot of merit in both ideas, though, if one really considers each of them. It's one of those things where I think it is simple-minded to choose one or the other. People trying to work out what it means to be people, and what makes up a person, including conscience, is hard. And the Bible never expressly states that the knowledge of good and evil is the same thing as a conscience. We decided those dots should be connected all by ourselves, like we do with most of our doctrine. Maybe we're even right about it too, though simple-minded in our understanding of what we're even connecting. So let's go ahead as if maybe we are right. Something was amiss with my conscience that needed work in order for me to move forward in my life. In my 20s, it gradually became clear to me that I was being manipulated by having had my conscience trained by my culture. And there had been a clear agenda seen in what was trained into it. That culture-trained conscience was like an operating system or control panel, guaranteeing I operated according to cultural expectations or I suffered programmed-in guilt responses. It was a way to make sure I never got free in any real way. I was so well programmed that cultural rules didn't need to be written down, and no one had to say a thing to make me feel guilt. It just happened automatically. In fact, tossed into new situations for which there was really no roadmap yet, my conscience could feel guilt about all manner of new, unfamiliar things before anything about their nature or meaning had even been ascertained. I didn't need church folk to make my new rules for me. My conscience produced its own new rules daily, all on its own, serving that brethren agenda. Like many, I had been coded to live out my days as a rule-knowing, rule-following, rule-generating machine. And I needed to grow beyond that if I was going to follow Jesus rather than meeting tradition and human ideas about piety. I increasingly learned that I could not follow both, and that legalism needed to stop at me. I needed to stop doing it to myself first, and then maybe even to others one day. This is, I think, the most upsetting thing about legalistic cultures like ours, that all of the needless, shame-enforced oppression and control freakishness which make our lives so difficult eventually become things we've been trained to do to ourselves, and our kids, and new converts. On the other hand, I've been troubled by how people who've done truly terrible things, for instance stealing, hurting children, substance abuse, or acts of negligence causing real harm to others, can justify these acts to themselves, by how they can feel very little guilt about them, how their consciences can somehow adjust so they're not terribly bothered anymore. I guess consciences aren't infallible. They can be turned up too high or down too low. They can be blind to all manner of things and hypersensitive to other ones. A conscience is no substitute for wisdom from and interaction with God. Once again, a conscience which is muted or more or less off isn't doing its job. But a conscience which feels guilt all the time for any number of stupid reasons isn't a working conscience either. And really, all that was behind most of my cultural training was a programmed feeling of guilt and shame whenever I was having a good time, had a flow experience, forgot myself, let go of control. Whenever I really started to enjoy myself, my conscience was like a safety valve or governor which shut me down so all that would stop. Pleasure couldn't be right, could it? Couldn't be okay? After all, it wasn't time for heaven yet. This is programming, encoding, indoctrination, done with peer pressure, stories, and songs from a very young age. It's very, very deep and lasting. In my 20s, I had to come to terms with the idea that this raw, inflamed conscience thing was itself part of a condition of sin, was part of human, carnal approaches to life, was living according to the flesh. Sin and the flesh. Sin is a state of flawed, dark, twisted, stunted weakness. Contrary to a myriad horror movies, sin isn't supernatural strength, power, and evil health, nor does it provide those. Strength, power, and health are good things, and good things come from God. Sin, even in people like Hitler or Charles Manson, is not conducive to sanity, health, and strength. It results in irrational, selfish, self-destructive, and cruel acts, which the Bible calls sins, plural, of course, but these are just the fruit of the tree. Sin, singular, is being effed up. Sins, then, are the effed up things we do next as a result. Psychiatrists, pastors, sponsors, and therapists the world over are trying to help people work through their sin, the rot at the root, to make them take responsibility, to leave their fear behind, to kick addictions and destructive life patterns. Thing is, the crippling guilt, the shame, the self-loathing are almost always present in messed up people with ruined lives. And the guilt, shame, and self-loathing, contrary to what one would think, don't seem to be part of any workable solution to their problems. They often seem to be viewed as the entrance fee or price of admission for the sins, payable on a day-to-day basis if one wishes to continue to enjoy them. People seem to choose to use guilt and shame and self-loathing as enabling factors. So long as they feel them, they can feel they're kind of okay. At least they have shame, and they continue in the messed up stuff. They're paying for this ride they're on with the guilty feelings, and they're staying on it. This cycle is part of what is called the flesh, I believe. Weakness. Knowing what things you don't think it's good to do, but not being able to stop, lacking the strength, restraint, momentum, and resolve, vowing things, and not being able to follow through. In the Bible, the flesh is a term used to describe typical, traditional, uninspired, common-sense, conventional wisdom, well-intentioned but misguided human attempts to deal with all those human problems described as sin in the Bible. The flesh tries to please God, but it's a tow truck trying to pull itself up out of the lake. It always fails, no matter how much one's fleshly willpower is engaged. If it had been sufficient, Jesus would never have had to come here. The Bible outlines what the result of putting one's faith in the flesh is, despite its best humanitarian, often religious, intentions. Sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and things like these. I slowly came to realize that much of what I had been taught to see as virtue or piety or a careful Christian walk was simply put the flesh trying to please God, human stuff, sin management systems, lifestyle makeovers, cosmetic stuff, painting the lifeboats on the Titanic while it is sinking. And the pious lifestyle I grew up under seemed to invariably bear fruit that is well described in the list I just gave. Certainly, the piety pageants, rivalries, envy, fightings, and fits of anger, the divisions, and, it must be admitted, the idolatry. We had an idol, set up on high, blocking our view of God. It was a Puritan, Pharisee, human thing made out of our own doctrine, rules, clean-cut fashions, worship-style preferences, and entertainment sacrifices. Mainly, it was about our fleshly concept of what we felt was a Christian image, testimony, and reputation. And we worshipped it daily. We were led around by crippling fear of damaging that image. If there was a way God wanted me to be, a life He intended me to live, if He'd built potential into me and expected to see it pay off, I needed something more than that human stuff. Something that would pull me out of that fleshly cycle of using nothing more than our human religious efforts to try to be less angry, closed, cold, nasty, competitive, envious, strife-filled, fighting folks. Because it wasn't working. We had those works of the flesh among us in spades, and were relatively complacent, unrepentant, clueless, and helpless about all of it. My culture had set itself up to prevent a Christian having a right to make up his or her own mind about what he or she thought Christ wanted. It needed more control than simply pointing people to Christ would have offered. A lot more control. Now, this was a very delicate operation, this unhitching my conscience from my culture and opening it up to God's recalibration. I know many who, just as soon as their having fun is shameful process started to be dialed down, went completely off the rails and did nothing but have fun. So much fun, they were miserable, became hedonists and addicts, leaped wholeheartedly into serving and producing those other works of the flesh. Sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, sorcery, drunkenness, orgies, and things like these. The very works of the flesh our culture had been trying to stamp out using peer pressure, indoctrination, and shame, rather than the other works of the flesh that our culture generally overlooked. Not only overlooked, but went so far as to officially demand support for their formally enacting one of the things on that list, divisions. But the young were after the fun works of the flesh, not divisions. Carol from New Zealand says,
I'm not sure that throwing legalistic church culture overboard makes any more of a mess of one's life than hypocritically hanging on to it for grim death. I know of a couple of brethren youngsters who chucked a lot of stuff overboard and did things like getting pregnant to multiple different men, smoking, publicly dissing the brethren, who then respectively returned to the brethren. I'm not sure that they were repentant prodigals, just more disappointed with how hard it was to live in the outside world without family and taking responsibility for one's actions.
That rebel path wasn't what I wanted. I wanted growth, development, and real lasting change, not just to kick against the pricks who'd made the rules and be sweary about them, only to later bow down before them to get let back in. So I took things really slowly. I knew that I had to wait until my conscience caught up and grew up. To do otherwise would have shredded me up inside. So even though right from my first year of university, I did not believe that drinking a beer would have been wrong for me, nor was I concerned that anything bad would happen if I did, still, the indoctrination was hanging on. I felt funny about it. So I took it easy. Didn't jump off the deep end. Gradually waited while those dead old oak leaves from previous seasons fell off and new buds took their place. Waited for Jesus to do His work in me. Waited for inner freedom. Some of our guys became alcoholics, though. Chip-carrying ones, or ones who will no more go to an AA meeting nowadays than they will go to a Brethren Bible meeting. Some of us are in jail right now. Some of us are dead. But some of us are free. Because not everyone went off the rails, of course. Anne writes,
I think I've been pretty damned repressed and cautious. Even if it doesn't look that way from the outside, I'm still trying to get free. I haven't watched too many others in their escape from the meetings, Most left and joined regular churches. My brother smokes weed and is into sports. I don't think he crashed and burned. I haven't seen people make a mess of their lives. The hardest thing is the social isolation of not having that social hive to be a part of, not knowing where to get that cozy feeling of belonging again.
Was it worth it just to break loose from my culture and get my heart free to follow Jesus, given what was at risk and what I had to sacrifice? I believe so, but I really don't think it was up to me. I think God was in my growth, and it was simply going to happen, whether it was politically and socially convenient for me, trying to get along in my culture, or not. I think a dandelion is going to push its way up through that crack in the sidewalk, because God built that into it. It seeks light. So it was either going to be about me living a life that knew and wished to please my culture, or one that actually knew and pleased God. One of those was easier in the short term, but had no real life in it. The other was harder than anything I could imagine and would take the rest of my life to live out. My culture was a human thing, fleshly, a God replacement. By contrast, God himself is above all. God has answers that the human stuff can't aspire to, and God is a rewarder of them that seek him out. So if you go looking for him outside the camp, you're going to soon enough find him looking for you too. Did I have all the answers and know better than my culture? Of course not. I just knew that my culture wasn't God, and that it was in my way while I sought him. So I repented of it, fought the urge to make a new, better list of rules, fought the temptation to start a new, better Christian group, kicked over my father's altars and high places, the ones I'd been taught to set up inside myself, and I got kicked out of my culture as a result. I grew up with the Bible, and with some people who are in many ways quite careful about each other, so my conscience has retained some basics. But a whole lot of the extremes of conscience had to be grown beyond, the ones which turned me into our legalistic version of a Clockwork Orange, an inhuman thing programmed to respond to joy as a danger sign, interpreting any form of thriving as dangerous and suspect. And that's what I'm still doing, growing past it all. And I'm not finished.